is 9:32, so why don't we go ahead and get started. Interesting, I don't see anyone joining us by phone, so everyone is noted on as being in attendance. Again, time being 9:32 a.m., I want to call this meeting to order. Appreciate everyone being here, and I know as we move on, there will be more and more people joining us. We have some introductions to do. First of all, I would love to introduce Drenda Howitt. Drenda, wave to everyone. And why don't you introduce yourself, Drenda? You are the new Natural Resources legislative person at AOC.
I am. Thank you, Commissioner. I'm Drenda Howitt, and I come to AOC from a long history of working in Clackamas County with the Board of Commissioners for many years, and I'm excited to be now working on statewide issues for all of our counties.
So we appreciate you being here, Drenda. Again, you know, this is something that when Lauren left us, we were going to be left in the lurch, and was never going to be the same. We said the same thing about Susan Morgan. You stepped in, Drenda, and just been doing a terrific job. We appreciate you so much.
Thank you so much. You.
Absolutely. One other, and I'm not sure, Mike Buffo. Mike, I'm not sure, were you with us at our last meeting? Did I introduce you at our last meeting?
Yes, I was, yeah.
Since I've gone to this extent, why don't you introduce yourself again? That would be great.
Okay, thanks. Well, I'm relatively new at Mason Bruce and Gerard, working with Mark here. I'm a senior forest economist, and we'll be helping Mark out with work in our group here. And before being with Mason Bruce and Gerard, I was with the Washington Department of Natural Resources for 10 years.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate that very much. So let's go ahead and get started. I am chair of Council of Forest Trust Land Counties and FTLAC, Tillamook County Commissioner Dave Yamamoto. And again, I want to thank everyone for being here. Unfortunately, Vice Chair John Sweet is unable to join us this morning, although he did say that if he had some sort of connection, he would call in, but I don't see anyone on the phone, so apparently he's not in that area yet. Let's go through and make sure we have our Board of Directors with us. So position one, Tillamook County, Aaron Scar. Aaron, can you introduce yourself?
Good morning. Aaron Scar, Tillamook County Commissioner.
Thank you, Aaron. Position two, Clatsop County, Courtney Bangs. Courtney.
Morning, everyone. Courtney Bangs, Clatsop County Commissioner.
Thank you for being here. Position three, which includes Clackamas, Columbia, and Washington County, Board of Director Margaret Magruder.
Good morning, Margaret Magruder, Columbia County.
Thank you for being here, Margaret. Position four, which includes Benton, Lincoln, Lynn, Marion, and Polk County. Do we have Craig Pope with us yet this morning? Didn't see him. He hasn't logged on just yet. We'll see if he comes on. Position five, which again includes Coos County, Douglas County, Josephine County, Klamath County, and Lane County. Bob Main. Bob, are you with us? Don't see Bob with us yet either. Okay, let's do other commissioners from the trust counties. I know Commissioner Mary Faith Bell is taking a well-deserved break this week. So position two, Clatsop County. Do we have any other commissioners from Clatsop County? I know Leanne is on the line.
Oh, Leanne's on the line, David.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Other commissioners from Clatsop? Don't see any. How about Clackamas County? Do we have any commissioners from Clackamas County with us this morning? Any other commissioners from Columbia County?
Hi there. Good morning. Casey Garrett, Columbia County.
Commissioner Garrett, thank you for joining us. Appreciate it very much. So there's only one left, Henry Heimuller. Is Henry on the line? I don't see Henry. Washington County.
Good morning, okay. David.
Commissioner Willie, how are you?
I am good. Thank you very much. Jerry Willie, Washington County Commissioner for District 4, which is the western side of Washington County.
Thank you for being with us. Any other commissioners from Washington County? I don't see any others at this point. Anyone from Benton County? Lincoln County? Lynn County. Marion County? Anyone from Polk County?
Hello, David. Lyle Moorhurst, Polk County Commissioner.
Hey, good morning, Lyle. Thank you for being here. Appreciate it very much. Coos County? Douglas County? Anyone? Josephine County? Klamath County? Anyone from Lane County? I don't see anyone else. I know we have Chair Kelly with us. Jim, would like to introduce yourself, please.
Sure. Jim Kelly, Board Chair for the Board of Forestry. Thank you. Just got a couple of things I'd like to say. One is that I think, speaking for the board, we're thrilled that the advisory committee is meeting now regularly, and so very happy to see that. And also just wanted to tell you, I'm kind of zoomed out because we just had our Board of Forestry retreat, which was all day on Wednesday and half a day yesterday. But because it was a retreat, we did speak a lot about, you know, our relationships, certainly as a board and other relationships. And one of the things that I brought up and we talked about and had a good conversation is that, you know, our relationship is a tough one right now with the Forest Trust Lands counties. And so the board is, I think, really focused on hoping to improve those relationships as we go forward, you know, recognizing that we still have the unresolved lawsuit and it's certainly difficult issues, recognizing that as, you know, as our role representing the citizens of the state as a whole is different from each of your roles. And we want to be very respectful, and we just hope that we are able to find ways to work together and to continue to improve that relationship. With that, I just, you know, my role here today is really one of listening, and so I'll shut up at this point, but thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here, Jim. We do appreciate it so much. Do we have any other Board of Forestry members with us this morning? Let's see any. I don't see State Forester Nancy Hirsch. Is Nancy going to be joining us this morning? Do we know?
This is Liz. She's not going to be able to make it this morning. She was triple booked. Sends her apologies.
I know the feeling. I do. And Liz, since you are up, why don't you introduce yourself and other members of your team that are present?
Sure. Happy to do that. Good morning, everybody. My name's Liz Dent, and I serve as a State Forest Division Chief. Happy to be here today to continue the conversation that we've had at the past couple of meetings with you all around the draft goals for Forest Management Plan. This morning, we're down to a pretty short team to lead those conversations. It's myself and Mike Wilson. Mike, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. Good morning, everyone. My name's Mike Wilson. I am the Deputy Division Chief of Policy and Technical Support.
And then we do have quite a few field folks with us today, and other folks from the Salem office, from the division. Again, as I mentioned last time, all these folks have close connections with their local county commissioners and are really wanting to make sure we're tracking these conversations as a whole. I thought what I'd do, instead of going through a whole roll call of everybody, is give the district foresters a chance to introduce themselves. Okay. So, Dan?
Good morning, all. Dan Goody, Astoria District Forester.
Thank you for being here.
Kate?
Good morning, Kate Skinner, the Tillamook District Forester.
Good morning, Kate. Thank you so much for being here.
Michael?
Good morning, Michael Curran, District Forester for West Oregon District.
Thank you.
And I'm scanning the list here, and I think that's all that we have for District Foresters today. I will ask Kyle and Ola if you'd introduce yourselves as representatives from those districts.
Good morning.
Sure, I'll go.
Oh. I'm sorry, Kyle, I walked on you.
Nope, go ahead.
Okay, thanks. Good morning, everyone. I'm Ola Book, the Assistant District Forester for the Western Lane District.
Thank you for being here.
And good morning, all. Kyle Kopp, Acting Sanium Unit Manager for the North Cascade District ODF.
Perfect. Thank you for being here.
I think that that's everybody I see from the districts, that the leadership from those districts.
Very good. Thank you. And certainly, last but not least, we've got Mark Rasmussen. We're going to miss Mark. He's going to be retiring not for another year or so. But Mark has been indispensable to us. Mark, please give us an introduction.
I'm Mark Rasmussen from Mason, Bruce, and Gerard, and I will be around for a long time. So I don't know if you're hinting that I should wink out sooner here, David.
No. Absolutely not. Okay. I was surprised when you brought Mike Buffo in and said, this is my replacement. I'm thinking to myself, oh, my God, how did that happen? But, again, I have to hand it to Mike. He has stepped right in also and been doing just a terrific job. We appreciate both of you so much at this point. We do.
We have the luxury of long-term thinking about this at our company. So
great.
We're real happy to have Mike here.
Mason, Bruce, and Gerard, again, is indispensable to the Council of Fourth Coastline Counties. We appreciate all your work. I did notice that Andy White just popped in. Andy, why don't you give us a quick introduction?
Good morning, all. Sorry I'm late. Andy White, Northwest Oregon Area Director.
Thank you for being here. Okay, those are the introductions. Did I forget anyone that we need to introduce? And Drenda, I just need to say don't take this wrong, please, but I can tell it's coming up on Halloween because everything is disappearing except your head and your
back. Maybe I should change the background.
Just giving you a bad time. Chair Kelly, did you have any other comments that you'd like to make?
I think I covered everything that I wanted to say. Thank you.
You bet. Thank you so much. So we have next on our agenda approval of the September 17 FTLAC meeting minutes. They were included in your packet. I'm hoping people have had a chance to peruse them and have any questions, concerns, or we would also look for a motion.
I would move to approve.
Second.
We have a motion to approve from Commissioner Magruder, second from Commissioner Bangs. Any discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Minutes are approved. Great, thank you. So we're running ahead of schedule, which is great. I hope to get everyone out of here before noon or so. So our next agenda item is review the draft goals for the draft forest management plan. And this is something that we have been looking at over the past few weeks. And Liz, I hope you don't mind, but I would love the opportunity to start here.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. And we have a PowerPoint presentation worked up, and I'm hoping that Mike would be able to present that PowerPoint for us. Wow, that was quick, Mike. I'm impressed. So let me give you a little introduction and background here. So our main topic today will be about the draft goals that ODF has prepared to guide the forest management planning process. ODF first sent these draft goals to us in August. The agency has conducted public meetings around the goals and has discussed them with the Council of Forest Trust Land Counties. We certainly appreciated ODF's willingness to engage in the discussion. Last Friday, in preparation for this meeting, we had a very frank discussion with ODF about these draft goals. I expressed my frustration. It seems like there were too many goals, they were not prioritized, and most of them don't address the primary purpose of the state forest trust lands, to manage the timberlands to generate revenue for the counties, their taxing districts, and the state, which includes operational dollars for ODF, as well as monies saved by not funding schools in many trust counties through the School Equalization Fund. Since last Friday, when the FTLAC executive team met with ODF, I've come to the realization that my issues with the draft goals that I saw then is that they appear to be redefining and enlarging the definition of greatest permanent value. When I looked at the draft goals through the lens of greatest permanent value, GPV, my uneasiness with these draft goals became clear. First, we have a disagreement with the state about the purpose of these state forest trust lands. As you all know, the jury in the Linn County case found that the state breached their contractual obligation to manage these lands to attain greatest permanent value. Second, even if I set aside the verdict in the Linn County case and look at the 1997 state administrative rule for greatest permanent value, it appears to me that the draft goal statements are not completely aligned with greatest permanent value as defined by that 1997 rule. I see draft goals that are not referenced in the greatest permanent value. I see draft goals that seem to go beyond the greatest permanent value. And most importantly, I don't see that a draft goal that references timber management to produce revenue as the quote-unquote managed focus of the plan, as required by the 1997 OIR on greatest permanent value. This is what I want to talk with you about today. I have a few slides that illustrate these problems. At the end of this presentation, I'll present what I think we should tell the Board of Forestry about the draft goals at its November meeting. So this is, again, about ODF's draft forest management plan goals and greatest permanent value. Next slide, please, Mike. The first slides are a reminder of the Chapter 236, 1941 Act. This law states that the board will manage state trust lands to secure the greatest permanent value. It is the county's position that any forest management goal should be consistent with this law. This law established the contract between the counties and the states for the management of the land. And again, it's underlined to secure the greatest permanent value of such lands. Next slide, please, Mike. The 1941 Act stated that greatest permanent value would come from the sale of forest products. Other permitted uses included grazing and recreation. However, these activities could be permitted by the Board of Forestry when they were not, quote unquote, not detrimental to the purposes of this act, which is, again, is underlined under C here. Next slide, please, Mike. The Linn County class action lawsuit is under appeal, and I won't spend a lot of time on that. I think, however, that the draft goals are problematic even under the current administrative rule adopted by the legislature in 1997. Since I know that ODF and the Board of Forestry feel bound by this administrative rule, I want to go into this in some detail. First, I notice that the 1997 greatest permanent value rule clearly requires sustainable timber and revenue production, even as it adds other considerations provided in the 1941 Act. Let me be clear that it is my opinion that the contract between us and the state was clearly taken into account by the Linn County Award, with the jury awarding $1.065 billion, which is currently gaining interest at the state-mandated 9% interest rate, which is adding $262,000 every day. That's almost $100 million a year. And this interest has been accruing now for, I believe, over a year and a half. So again, when we look at the OAR 629-035-0020, greatest permanent value, 1A provides sustainable and predictable production of forest products that generate revenues for the benefit of the state, counties, and local taxing districts. Next slide, please, Mike. The rule states that to secure the greatest permanent value, the lands will be actively managed to provide sustainable timber harvest and revenue to the state, counties, and local taxing districts. Here, the rule clearly identifies a management focus for these lands, and that it is to provide sustainable harvest and revenue. And I do want to point that out, the last red underline, this management focus. And so let me read item two. To secure the greatest permanent value of these lands to the state forester shall maintain these lands as forest lands and actively manage them in a sound environmental manner to provide sustainable timber harvest and revenues to the state, counties, and local taxing districts. This management focus, and again, I want to repeat that, this management focus is not exclusive of other forest resources, but must be pursued within a broader management context, that A, results in a high probability of maintaining and restoring properly functioning aquatic habitats for salmonids and other native fish and aquatic life. B, protects, maintains, and enhances native wildlife habitats. C, protects soil, air, and water. And D, provides outdoor recreation opportunities. Next slide, please, Mike. These are other parts of the greatest permanent value rule. And since we're going into detail, let me read these. Number three, management practices must A, pursue compatibility of forest uses over time, B, integrate and achieve a variety of forest resource management goals, C, achieve over time site-specific goals for forest resources using the process as set forth in OAR 629-035-0030 Forest Management Planning through 629-035-0070 Forest Lands Exchanges and Acquisitions. 3D, consider the landscape context. E, be based upon best science available. And F, incorporate an adaptive management approach that applies new management practices and techniques as new scientific information and results of monitoring become available. Next slide, please, Mike. Wait a minute. I think I may be off once. Mike, can you tell me what slide this is? Is this eight? I think that's one. Yes. Well,
sorry about that. No, I don't have the numbers. This is the last part of the greatest permanent value rule.
Okay. So let me just read that. So the state forester shall manage lands as provided in this section by developing and implementing management plans for a given planning area as provided in OAR 629-035-0030 and 629-035-0100 existing long range plans. And number five, the board shall review 629-035-0020 greatest permanent value to management focus no less than every 10 years in light of social, economic, scientific, and silvicultural considerations. Next slide, please. Okay, we seem to have dropped the slideshow. I'll let Mike put it back together again.
You know, Commissioner, I'll take over here. Mike sent me a text earlier saying that he was having some internet problems. So I'll take this over as the backup.
Okay.
show you that I'm not quite retired yet.
Okay, so let's go to slide 8, please.
Let's see.
Let's leave it up in this way. That way we can see the slide. So let's go to number, I believe it's number, let's look at 7.
Which screen am I sharing? I lost track of that.
Oh, I've got the slides numbered on the left-hand side. Oops, now that disappeared.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, okay, good.
Number 7.
There's 7. Here's 8.
We just went there. So this is number 8. Perfect.
Right.
So now that we've looked at the 1997 rule, again, with which I do not agree, I want to compare each of the draft goals to that rule. First, let's look at the timber production goal. I believe that the timber production goal is consistent with the greatest permanent value in the 1997 rule. And of the draft goals, timber production is listed. It's to provide sustainable and predictable production of forest products that generate revenues and jobs for the benefit of the state, counties, and local taxing districts. Next slide, please. Now, I'm going to show you where I think the draft goals go beyond even the 1997 rule. I won't dwell on all of the goals, but I think you'll quickly get the point here. So, when you look at forest carbon, the 1997 rule doesn't say anything about carbon or climate change. When you look at wildfire is not mentioned in OAR. However, minimizing wildfire damage is consistent with the management focus of sustainable timber and revenue generation. And again, when you look at mining, agriculture, administrative sites, and grazing, leased resources is not mentioned in the OAR. However, this goal seems consistent with revenue generation. Next slide, please. Likewise here, the rule doesn't say anything about maintaining understory vegetation or pollinators. So when you talk about plants, plant direction is not mentioned in OAR. Pollinator and invertebrate is not mentioned in the OAR. Air quality. The OAR states protects soil, air, and water, but maintain is not mentioned in the OAR. And transportation systems, again, the OAR does not mention transportation systems. Next slide, please. The greatest permanent value rule does not mention either culture or scenic objectives. And the draft goals for recreation clearly go far beyond the rule. So again, with culture, which is currently yet under development by the department, culture is not mentioned in the OAR. Scenic is not mentioned in the OAR. Recreation, education, and interpretation. The OAR states provides outdoor recreation opportunities. Additional language in the draft goals is not reflected in the OAR. Next slide, please. So the draft goals for aquatics expands the requirements beyond what is written in the rule. Terms like dynamic and resilient are not defined. So here, aquatics and riparian, the OAR states that management results in a high probability of maintaining and restoring properly functioning aquatic habitats for salmonids and other native fish and aquatic life. The OAR does not include terms like dynamic and resilient, or consideration of riparian-dependent wildlife. The OAR only refers to aquatic life. When it comes to aquatics and riparian, where it's talking about maintaining drinking water, the OAR states protect soil, air, and water. Drinking water source maintenance and protection, again, is not mentioned in the OAR. Next slide, please. So the draft goals for soil adds the term enhance, but does not define it. So under soil, the OAR states protect soil, air, and water. maintain and enhance, again, are not mentioned in the OAR. When it comes to forest health, the OAR states that the management focus for state lands is sustainable timber and revenue production. This goal goes further than the OAR. And when it comes to wildlife, again, the OAR states protect, maintain, and enhances wildlife, native wildlife habitats, and does not include other aspects of the draft goal. Next slide, please. So, special forest products. Here is one that is a little different. In this instance, it doesn't go as far as the 1997 OAR rule requires. The rule associates special forest products with generating revenue, but the draft goal doesn't. So again, forest products are mentioned in the OAR. However, they are included in the context of providing sustainable and predictable production of forest products that generate revenues for the benefit of the state, counties, and local taxing districts. Again, revenue generation is not included in this draft goal. Next slide, please. So there may be other laws that affect forest management in addition to the greatest permanent value rule. If so, ODF has the responsibility to identify these requirements and show how the draft goal is consistent with the requirements. ODF is not required to exceed these requirements, especially at the expense of the management focus. So again, we do feel that there may be other laws that affect forest management. But again, the draft goals are not consistent with the requirements, and ODF is not required to exceed these requirements, especially at the expense of management focus. Next slide, please. So as far as recommended testimony to the Board of Forestry, with all of what we've just talked about in mind, here is what I think we should tell the Board of Forestry at its November meeting. Number one, ODF has a contractual obligation to provide sustainable timber harvest and revenues to the counties. The primary goal driving management under the Forest Management Plan should be to provide sustainable timber harvest and revenues to the states, the counties, and the taxing districts. This is greatest permanent value based in the 1941 Act. It is also mostly consistent with the management focus identified in the 1997 Greatest Permanent Value Administrative Rule. We should certainly support other management strategies, management actions, management standards, and guidelines that are complementary, accommodative, or incidental to this primary goal. Other actions or standards that are in conflict with the primary goal should be accommodated only to the extent required to meet other laws or rules. And ODF should make clear what the requirements of those laws or rules are. Next slide, please. So FTLAC has a statutory responsibility to advise the Board of Forestry and the state forester on matters which affect management of state forest trust lands. I think it is our duty to notify the Board of Forestry that it appears that the draft goals offered by ODF stray beyond the greatest permanent value defined even in the 1997 administrative rules. Before accepting any of the draft goals, the Board of Forestry should ask ODF to reconcile the language in the draft goals with the administrative rule. Further, while we understand ODF's desire to keep the public informed about the processes and efforts, it is inappropriate for ODF to ask the public to offer goal language in place of that established in law or rule. Same thing goes for priority rankings. So that is what we have looked at as we looked at the draft language. And again, last Friday, I had some real concerns about what was going on. So I'd like to turn it over to the commissioners. Um, what what does everyone think about going over the draft goals? And I'd love your comments on this. Anyone?
Commissioner Yamamoto, Margaret.
Yes. Commissioner Magruder.
And I truly appreciate the diligence of you and staff. I'm assuming you did not do all of this on your own, Commissioner Yamamoto.
How did you know that, Margaret?
because I know you didn't have time to do it all on your own. Really a great presentation and pointing out some very significant things that need to be pointed out. And I am at this point, having only listened to it briefly and seen it, I think you're on the right track, that we cannot stray from the OAR and the language and the definitions. We get kind of far off track, and I truly appreciate this analysis.
Thank you, Commissioner Magruder. Hey, Mark, can you take the slideshow down? I know there's other hands up, and I can't see everyone in the audience see their hands up, although I think I see Commissioner Bangs. Yes, Commissioner Bangs.
So I think my comment is going to be multifaceted here. I do thoroughly appreciate Commissioner Yamamoto's presentation that he put together and staff put together. I think coming back to the main focus of why, like, why are we doing what we're doing, or why are we having this conversation? I also wanted to just kind of air some concerns that I had prior to moving forward. I feel like that this is probably the best forum for it. So I watched the Board of Forestry retreat via the interweb, and I was really pleased to hear some of the acknowledgement from the board about the need to work on relationships with FTLAC specifically. And I also was really pleased to see the acknowledgement on what the impact for these forestry policies moving forward we're going to have on our counties. These rural counties have been recognized by the board as being a minority voice in our state. Our voices often get lost in the shuffle of a statewide conversation. Our minority voices get drowned out by opinions of how we should manage our state forests, without understanding or caring or providing attention to what those impacts will have on our rural communities. I would love that very respectful dialogue with our Board of Forestry. I appreciated Ms. Chambers' Reedsport perspective that she provided during that meeting, but I was also disappointed to hear members discuss that the counties are out of touch because we are worried about our economic impacts. I was really disappointed just because these counties, we as counties, have been recognized by the board chair himself as having a minority voice. So we are talking about basic services, schools that are barely meeting minimum programs. The ability to respond to fire, medical, basic law enforcement, and emergency response, and the likelihood of keeping beds open in our care centers. I guess the opinion that we're not looking more broadly at our economies, that was a statement that was made. It felt insulting to me. And so please know that I'm coming from a very respectful place when I'm trying to air my concerns here. All of the county leadership in our counties are looking at opportunities to develop our financial situations. We are not trying to depend fully on state lands. Rural Oregon, though, does not have internet power, paved infrastructure, access to railways, industrial ports, or any other of the number of potential advantages that our urban neighbors have. And so for many of those reasons, we do not have the advantages that the money is funneled in. We don't have those advantages. It was unfortunate for me to hear that because we have a different opinion, that we were considered out of touch. That was really concerning to me, because I feel like a caretaker of my county. In these days, a focus on equity and equality, I was sad to hear in a public meeting that some of our leadership was advocating for quieting that minority voice, I guess. So I wanted to take a moment and provide a dose of perspective or rural reality that we as commissioners deal with every day. And I can only speak to Clatsop County, but in Clatsop County, our state forest is roughly 20% of our overall land base. Forest lands is approximately 80% of our entire county. And to tell us as commissioners that we should look at different revenue opportunities without acknowledging that huge land base just was really staggering to me. We as counties, back to 1941, thank you Yamamoto for that. We as counties invested in these lands early on to get them reforested, to get them to thrive, and to hear folks tell us that we might not get a return on those investments, and to tell us that we are out of touch was really disappointing. What I'm hearing in those statements is that we made a bad investment. And so I feel like I'm being told that instead of investing in forest land, we should have looked at zoning these areas as residential or industry. What I'm hearing us being told that is instead of building habitat and carbon storage, we should have paved and industrialized like our Portland neighbors. If you look at Astoria historically, its original footprint was a goal to be like the port of San Francisco. Instead, we allowed Portland that honor, and now we're being penalized for looking into a long-term environment and investing in an ecosystem that is both resilient and can provide sustainable jobs that are vital to our worldwide market. So I'm disappointed that I feel like we're being shoved to the side, that we're being accused of being almost ignorant. I'm disappointed that we are being told that we lack vision. So instead, I would really like it for, you know, our Board of Forestry to embrace the good work that we're doing in our forest lands, to talk about how when we harvest trees, we're helping fill a need that would otherwise be met by other parts of the world that have no forest practices. Every acre we choose to preserve and protect here causes a negative impact somewhere else. That harvest has to happen somewhere else. If the desire of Oregonians is to help combat climate change, then I think the best thing that we can do is have a healthy, productive forest that is harvested sustainably over time. As counties, we've watched our federal partners preserve their lands and then watch it go up in smoke. So not only did that release, frankly, a gigantic amount of carbon and any gains that we might have had in relation to the climate, those trees could have gone to a local mill and provided local jobs. Instead, trees were harvested in another nation with little or no forest protections and a high likelihood that they were never replanted. The board, and this is a direct reply to a statement made, the board may not have authority over those federal acres as they discussed, but it can at least recognize that the federal acres is almost 60% of our entire state. And it is already what I would call an unsuccessful management style. So in overall impact to climate, you know, our global climate or even the state level climate, our state forest decisions have an incredibly small impact. But the far-reaching impact of the decisions being made today to the counties that they are local, you know, located in is not small. You do have control over your 4% in Oregon. Of that 4%, you have control of 1/5 of my county. I am constantly frustrated by people shouting that we need to recognize climate change while making decisions that realistically have a net negative to our overall world climate. And it results in an economic wasteland to the communities that are impacted. So I'm gonna ask that as we move forward, that we acknowledge that yes, we're coming from two very different perspectives when we're discussing our state lands, but that your decision that you make has a far-reaching impact on my community. And to tell me that I'm not looking hard enough for other economics is just startling. I was so startled by that statement and so disappointed by that statement, because I know every single commissioner sitting in this room is constantly looking for how we can get more funding for our communities. So I just want that respectful conversation. I want that respectful conversation, but that also means please give us the honor of acknowledging just how very hard we work to protect our community members. So thank you, David, or Commissioner Yamamoto, for letting me speak today. I was pretty, I'm very passionate, and please know that this came from a very respectful portion of wanting to offer true perspective on why I'm fighting like a bulldog, and know that these are comments that I don't know, I'm fighting for my community. So thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Banks. I know that's heartfelt. I know how passionate you are. I do. Other comments, especially about the Commissioner Thompson.
Thank you. Clatsop County really is passionate about this. I will just say that I echo Commissioner Bang's comments. She's Clatsop County's representative to this body. I represent the southern half of Clatsop County. We have a lot of forests there. We have a lot of other kinds of people there. We are all united in our devotion to addressing climate change. And the only way to do that is to have workable communities. And the only way we can do that is to make the best use of our resource. I'll tell you that we in Clatsop County are supporting Business Oregon's application for a mass timber project for Build Back Better funds. We are doing our part to add value to the forest products, where we see a long-term crop as rural folk that supports our community. Urban folks see a parkland that they're entitled to play in. Parks cost money to maintain. Working forest lands provide revenue for individuals, for communities, and they heal the planet in a way that unmanaged timberland does not, because that unmanaged timberland is tinderland. So let's put our thinking caps on, look at the data, look at the science, and trust in each other's goodwill to find a workable solution with respect, because that urban-rural divide often, Commissioner Bangs is being polite about it, it has a tinge of contempt. So let's engage as respected equals. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner Thompson. Appreciate it very much. Any other comments, questions, concerns? Chair Kelly, put your hand up.
Yeah, thank you. On behalf of the board, you know, I understand that these were heartfelt comments, but I've got to point out that Commissioner Bangs ended her statement with that she really wants a respectful conversation. She started her comments by saying that the Board of Forestry members are not caring.
And I've just got to point out that that is offensive and is not a respectful comment. I spend a full time, and my job at this point is a full-time job, unpaid. And I, you know, I live in Grant County where I see the effect of forest policy on small towns. I know this. I care deeply about this. But we have to represent all of the citizens of Oregon, and that does include those urban dwellers. But that's not to look at what we are trying to do and not have the respect that we are volunteer citizens doing the best job we can to balance what are really difficult competing interests. We don't need to be treated like that. We do want a respectful conversation, and I am here to listen and to participate in a respectful conversation. I also encourage Commissioner Banks to re-listen to that section of the Board of Forestry retreat. I think I'm not sure where you got all the things that you said. I did not. I think that wasn't really an accurate representation of what was said, at least in some ways. So with that, I'll shut up. So thank you for listening.
Thank you, Chair Kelly. And I just have to say that I was not able to listen in on that meeting. So I will go back through and listen to that. Anything else from anyone before I turn this over to Liz? Yes, Commissioner Willie.
Well, just a comment. David, thank you very much for the homework that you did on that. The greatest permanent value is the key subject discussion that we have on certainly our Board of Commissioners. There was a letter generated, I believe it was 2013, from Board of Commissioners that the only one that is still with us is Commissioner Rogers. The other four are all new. So I've asked to find a copy of that letter. But certainly that is the total focus point. So if you would be so kind as to provide that slide presentation that you gave with that information, I would love to go back over that and then share that with my fellow commissioners so that we can all be on the same page here. And I am in complete agreement with the concerns that you're demonstrating and certainly the direction we're going on this. So thank you for doing that homework, and I'll look forward to reviewing that slide projection that you presented.
Thank you, Commissioner Willie. And yes, we were working on this up until just a few minutes before the meeting started, and it's been a work in progress. And I will hand it to Mark Rasmussen and Mike Buffo. And I apologized to the Department of Forestry at some of my comments that I made at last Friday's meeting. But when Mark, after that call, when Mark and I had a conversation, and Mike was present also, it was interesting that Mark said, Dave, I listened to every comment that you made during that meeting. And what you were talking, all the different points that I was making with Liz and company throughout, he said, all of that is about greatest permanent value. That's exactly what it's about. And when I thought about it, and Mark was absolutely right, every comment that I was making was concerning how greatest permanent value and the Linn County case, et cetera, just were not being taken into account. So I will hand it to Mark and Mike. They're the ones that did most of the homework here. I've got many things on my plate. Council of Forest Trust Land Counties and FTLAC is probably the top area that I absolutely do pay attention to and work through, but I couldn't do this without Mason, Bruce, and Gerard, and I do appreciate that so much. For having the clarity to, even when I didn't know what I was talking about, to have the clarity that Mark knew exactly what I was talking about. And so I appreciate that so much. I really do. Anything else, Liz and company, would you like to weigh in at all?
Well,
it's a lot. I know it's a lot.
Yeah, certainly we did talk about some of this last Friday in preparation for this meeting. Didn't have the work that you presented today to sort of help plan around for today's meeting. So I'm sitting here kind of thinking about our best foot forward for you all to have what you need for your deliberations, for your conversations, for your testimony to the. It looks like there towards the end of the presentation, you put a really articulate set of ideas forward for how you might, or the advice that you would give to the board. So we can go through what we had planned and reviewed with you last Friday. Mike and I can go through that, but I'm not sure it fits the need right now, given the work that you've already done. So I guess I'll put it back to you, David, and hear what it is that you'd like us to talk about.
Thank you, Liz. Cheryl Kelly, do you have your hand up again? Oh, I think you just took it down. Commissioner Banks.
So I know what I need in order to move forward is I need numbers. I need actuals. I need modeling. So I know that, you know, in government, everything goes at a much slower pace than I would like life to go. because it's checks and balances, but that's what I need going forward in these decisions is I need to know, you know, what are those economic impacts to our counties? Because I feel like as I look out at our forest lands, that we are doing a good job in regards to our climate and caring for our wildlife and our salmonoids. So I feel like we're doing a great job. But I need to know what the economic impacts are going to be moving forward.
Thank you, Commissioner. So I did see that our class counsel, John DiLorenzo, turned his camera on and he turned it back off. I'm just wondering if Mr. DiLorenzo has any comments.
Can you all hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner. And I appreciate having an opportunity to listen in on the discussion today. I think it's been an excellent discussion. Thank you, by the way, for your presentation, Mr. Chair, and to your consultants for having put that together. As you know, I am class counsel for Linn County and approximately 160 local governments who make up the class in Linn County versus Board of Forestry. And as Chair Yamamoto pointed out, that case is currently under appeal. The total amount owed to us, and I say us because that includes those of you who make up this Council of Forest Trustland Counties, the amount owed to us by way of the judgment is $1,065,919,400. The interest on the judgment as of today is $152,703,904. As Commissioner Yamamoto said, the interest accrues at the rate of $262,829 each day. The interest is the cost incurred by the state in refusing to engage with us day by day and refusing to acknowledge that they have a contract with us. Now, as you know, in November of 2019, a jury determined that the department's management of these lands, driven by its view of what greatest permanent value should mean, amounted to a breach of our contract. That's what the jury decided. Now, as articulate and as eloquent as you are, to further Commissioner Bang's remarks, your views really are minority views in the state. But the reason your minority views matter here is because you have a contract that other stakeholders lack. And I think it's very important that you always keep that in mind as you continue any of your deliberations. You know, if you're a party to a contract, it doesn't matter what the rest of the public thinks. It's what the contract says. And you have a contract and they don't. So always keep that in mind. Also, I think it's important to keep in mind that these forest trust lands, which, by the way, are only 3% of Oregon's total forested lands, were deeded by us to the state in exchange for a promise, which the jury found the department broke. Now, the evidence at the trial was uncontroverted that by using structure-based management, the department created endangered species habitat on purpose instead of managing on a 50-year rotation, which would have prevented owls and marbled murrelets from establishing their habitats in the first place. Forester Doherty referred to the FMP as creating a, quote, trajectory, unquote, of more and more, quote, encumbrances, unquote. Well, what that means is that the FMP was managing these lands into the ground and slowly destroying their economic value. I mean, that's what those fancy words meant. Now the department wants you to help them define goals which had no place in the 1941 Act, which defined our contract. Where in the 1941 contract is there a reference to the department's GPV rule, let alone the new goals? Where is the reference to pollinators and invertebrates, or culture, or smart carbon, or aquatic anchors? No one in 1941 even knew what those terms meant. Now, the 1941 Act established timber production as the primary goal. That was the basis of our contract. All other goals were secondary and were only to be undertaken if they did not interfere with the primary goal. And so I urge you to exercise great caution here and avoid being co-opted into endorsing these proposed goals, which in my view will only lead to further breaches of our contract. So, Mr. Chair, thanks for the opportunity to comment, and I'll leave you at that.
Thank you, Mr. DiLorenzo. Appreciate it so much. So I was notified by Drenda, who's keeping tabs on me, I'm under her thumb, that I forgot to do public comment in the beginning of this meeting. I apologize for that. So if it's okay with everybody, let me back up at this point to see if we do have any public comment. Seeing none. Okay, so honestly, I don't know where to go from here. I mean, I don't want to get into another Heart Scout conversation at this point. I don't. I think we all need to take a step back and look at all the points that were made. Commissioner Banks.
I do wanted to clarify something with Chair Kelly, if he's still on. Excellent. I want to reach out to you and apologize publicly if you felt like I was trying to attack you personally. That is never my intention. And if anybody spends any time with me in actual real life, they learn that about me. I am just very passionate about this topic and about my community. And so please know that I want that respectful dialogue, and in no way do I not respect the job that you are doing, because I feel like your position is no more fun than my position is. We are just on two sides of a coin trying to communicate. So I appreciate the work that you do in your volunteer position, and just know that the rest of us commissioners, you know, we're doing a similar work. It's just from a different direction. So anyhow, no more warm fuzzies from me, Commissioner Yamamoto. I'm gonna mute myself.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner Bangs, and apology accepted. just, you know, I know many of you are volunteers as well, and I know everything that's here is being said is heartfelt, and as long as, you know, we remember that we're all human beings and that we're all caring it's really important to recognize in all of this. It's easy to demonize others with other opinions, but really, with very few exceptions, people are doing what they're doing in these kinds of positions out of goodwill, and we all need to see that in each other. I certainly respect all of the work and the opinions, and know that they're heartfelt, and that a lot of work and energy goes into all of this on behalf of the people who live in your county. So, enough said.
Thank you both. Appreciate that so much. Liz, where do we go from here?
Sure. So maybe I'll tell you a little bit about the information we were going to share, and then you all can decide if that's a good, if that helps with the testimony that you plan on giving to the board in November. So the material we had pulled together incorporates the feedback that we heard from the last meeting that y'all had where we reviewed the goals. So there was some ideas around separating and creating separate goals that did a better job of sort of amplifying the importance of timber harvest and revenue. So we've done that. The conversation around community well-being so we've started taking a stab around what that might look like, how it relates to rural communities. We did some public outreach, and so we, with a public survey, so we have some data to share on public perception and input on what the forest management goals should look like, what might be missing, et cetera. So it's really, this was a chance for us to come back and show you the changes we had made since our last meeting. We really see your role as different than stakeholders. And so we have not incorporated stakeholder input into the draft goals for November. We will characterize stakeholder input to the Board of Forestry, but we have incorporated what we've heard from you so far. Mike Wilson also went through and highlighted the goals that are required under greatest permanent value, similar to the work that you did, David. So you'll see kind of the same work there that you've already heard. So that's the sort of additional information we can bring to this conversation. But again, don't want to go in a direction that may not be helpful. We're here to provide you with the information you need for your dialogue, your conversation, and your advice to the board. You know, we're here for a forward-looking process, refreshing relationships, being innovative, working together. So that's the vein within which we're here with you all, and that we prepare the materials that we're putting forth. While people chew on that for a minute, because I did basically put a question out as to if that's going to help you. And just the other thing I'll say is we've heard several times, not just from the commissioners, of the challenge of looking at goals without seeing it all together. So going to this question around where's the analysis before I can weigh in on X, I need to know Y and Z. Totally understandable. The place we're coming from is seeing a value in building this together instead of a year from now sort of pulling out this fully baked plan and saying, hey, what do you think? So the idea really is to build this together. There's no final decision on the goals or any other piece that we're bringing to you through to help develop together. There's no final decision on that until 2023. So as we do more, as strategies are developed and we do more analyses, we can come back and say, did we get that wrong? Should the goal be different? Did we miss a goal? And continue to work on that. That's what we mean by engaging you and working with you early in these processes. So just wanted to lay that groundwork for you all again.
Thank you. I appreciate that. But so when we presented the matrix that Mason Bruce and Gerard did, and you know, the matrix that we pointed out, we discussed at our last meeting on Friday, was such that it pointed up the facts that, you know, every one of these goals, depending on who was looking at the goal, could be positive, negative, neutral, slightly positive, slightly negative, and that's what started this whole conversation about looking at these 20 goals, and without seeing them in context, very difficult. And since you bring it up, Liz, I mean, I have to bring up again the discussion we had at the last meeting about the CCCP, the carbon, God, can't even remember what it stands for now. Climate Change and Carbon Plan. And again, it's such a complex document. And the word we got from everyone was that, well, you know, what we need to do is we think we need to just adopt this with no particular goals in mind or avenues. But over time, over the next 20 or 30 years, it'll be filled out to exactly what it means. And again, that to me is, without knowing what direction it's going to go and what consequences these decisions in the future might have, is it's just very, very difficult. So now that we're looking at possibly so we're not going to adopt any goals at this point for the Forest Management Plan update. But I think we're able to look at it through a different lens, and getting that clarity of looking at these goals, the 20 proposed goals for the Forest Management Plan, through the lens of greatest permanent value, I think really does set the stage for the direction, at least, that the Council of Forest Trust Land Counties is going to go. So again, there are issues all around. And the conversation I had with you last Friday, you know, I kept pointing to the fact that, you know, it just feels to the Council of Forest Trust Land Counties that the department is consistently taking bites out of the apple every year, more and more bites out of the apple. And every bite that's taken out of that apple affects the trust counties. And so we're up against three major issues with the department right now that are going to take huge bites out of the apple. We're looking at the CCCP, we're looking at the Habitat Conservation Plan, and we're looking at the update to the Forest Management Plan. And all of those, and so I'm starting all over again, Liz, and again, I apologize. But this is the conversation that we had last Friday. And again, Mark pointed up very, very diligently that my conversation about all the bites out of the apple, it's all about greatest permanent value. It is. So that I think needs to be our focus moving forward.
Right. Yeah, I couldn't agree more that this is precisely about greatest permanent value. So I actually think we are on common ground there. I don't see a conflict there. I think the next step that the conversation is going makes perfect sense as well. And as you know, last Friday, I fully affirmed and supported the notion that you as the chair for FTLAC would go to the board and speak, provide this exact input as far as which goals you think should remain as on the list, so to speak, and those that you feel don't belong there should be worded differently. That's the exact conversation we're trying to tee up. So I don't see any need or expect any apology whatsoever. I think we're on the same page there. What I do want to represent is the fact that actually, you know, in terms of revenue to the counties has been nothing but an increase in amount of revenue to record high levels over the past 6 or 7 years, and is projected to stay that way under the current management scenario for the next 4 years. We don't project any farther than that, given the volatility of the timber market. And so I do, I am trying to still to understand this notion that there's been somehow less revenue coming to the counties over the past several years because it actually has only gone up. And that actually started with the adoption of the 2000 plan, mostly what we're operating under now.
You set me up here, and we had this discussion last Friday. We did, and I told you then that it's not that much my concern about current forest revenue. Forest revenue is currently up. However, I am concerned about what happens as the HCP takes effect, if it were to take effect.
Yeah, understand.
Takes effect. As the CCCP takes effect, I'm concerned about revenue for the counties after I'm long gone from this county. That's where my concern is.
Absolutely. Absolutely appreciate that. And that's where recreating, if you will, refreshing this partnership is going to be critical. We have real challenges. Those also represent real opportunities. They're going to require new solutions. And we're really trying to invest and are hopeful that this kind of engagement and forward thinking will help us find those solutions to address the challenges that you're faced with, that we're faced with as Oregonians, and the importance of supporting our rural communities.
And supporting the department financially. I mean, that's one thing we can't forget. So, Commissioner Banks, I know you had your hand up, but I saw Mike Wilson. He had his hand up, and then he put it down, and now it's back up. So let me go to Mike Wilson first, please.
Thank you, Chair Yamamoto. I just wanted to say, mentioned that, you know, so we sent out the PDF that has the goals feedback and everything like that. And we can walk through it if there's an appetite. If not, that's fine. I did want to point out that when we talk about our forest management planning, we're not only responding to the GPV rule section itself, but in OAR 629035 are all of the OARs associated with our planning and management of state forests. And so actually the first section there in the definitions identifies forest resources. And so you may find the document helpful as you go through, and you know, basically I've annotated what of those forest resources as defined there that we have to address in our plans, our forest management planning. You are correct, of course, not all of them are part of that. And we are still having ongoing discussions around, you know, forest health and climate change and some of these things, which are more in alignment of something that supports all the other goals or has to be thought about with all the other goals in terms of resiliency and being able to produce those outcomes. So I'll just say, and the only other thing I would say is in that document, you know, for instance, we did, and I'm sorry, it's a busy document, but we did make suggested changes that we were planning to take forward to the board based on our last meeting before last with you. And if I'd really like folks to take a look at those if they could, because if we have changed them and it doesn't meet what you wanted, that would be important for us to know. The original goal is there. And then the feedback, your feedback is highlighted, and then in italics are any changes that were made. And then at the end, of course, two additions, and then just a list of other feedback we got that wasn't during the whole process from the public that didn't necessarily align, or sort of a parking lot, if you will, of issues that perhaps didn't go straight to a goal. So I just want to say that. Thanks.
Thank you, Mike. And so to your first point, I have up on my screen Rule 629-035-0030, Forest Management Planning in 2C. And this is the part that I keep going back to, 2C, Forest Resource Management Goals, which are statements of what the state forester intends to achieve for each forest resource within the planning area consistent with OAR 629-035-0020. Greatest permanent value. It all comes back to greatest permanent value again. It does.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. Maybe I'll wait for if Commissioner Bangs has a point, and then I might suggest a path forward here.
Thank you. Commissioner Bangs.
I had a couple things. I was going to first start. I would love to see how these three different plans talk to each other, because I know that they're being written as companions to each other. And I would really like to see how these three plans work together, because I think ODF's overall goal is to have the HCP, the CCCP, and the FMP. And I want to know, when they're working together, what does our picture look like? What does our output look like? Instead of looking at them individually, because I think your goal here is to have them work together. And then addressing the apple, I love analogies. Thank you, Commissioner Yamamoto. I like apples too. To Ms. Dent, if you guys let me keep my apple as it currently is, I would doubt that a lot of this hair-raising passion that you hear from me would be in this room. I loved my 19.6 million last year. I love my sometimes 25 million that I get into my community. So if my apple was left alone, as is, as we have had in our most recent last, 5 years, I feel like I would be a much more relaxed person going forward into our future as a community. But then I was told my apple isn't good enough. And here came an HCP, and there goes a giant bite out of my apple. And then now we have the CCCP. Here comes another bite out of my apple. And now we have an FMP that I fear is going to be another bite. And so you can see how my passion level increases exponentially as we start talking about more of my apple disappearing. So there's that analogy. Thank you for that, because I'm kind of a fan of analogies. And then to John DiLorenzo, I feel like we need to have a conversation about, for you and me, about the contracts, because a lot of that history, I'll be frank, I didn't know anything about it. I knew we had a contract with the state regarding our state forest lands, but a lot of that history and a lot of that information I felt was missing from me. So I thank you for that knowledge. We learn new things every day. But also I had a question. So that contract, is that contract with the entire state of Oregon, or is that just with our counties and the people in our counties?
Sarah, would you like me to answer that?
You certainly can. If we can keep it short, please, I would appreciate that, John.
Yeah, the circuit court instructed the jury that a contract existed between the counties and the state of Oregon. And that was the contract that was submitted to the jury, and the jury determined that the contract was breached. But it's the entire state of Oregon.
Okay, any other? Leanne Thompson. Leanne, I don't see your picture, but I see your hand up. There you go.
I'm here, David. And yes. Commissioner Thompson, Commissioner Yamamoto. Okay. So I think Commissioner Bangs speaks for Clatsop County. I just want to speak about my experience as a Clatsop County commissioner. What I see is that I have some environmentalist constituents, and Tim Josie is the one who said to me, Leanne, you're green as grass. I am green as grass. And we have people who have wealth. They have inherited wealth. They have trust funds. They have pensions. They have other sources of revenue. They are a loud voice in my community. And I don't know who responded to the survey data, but as a body, they have time and passion to save the environment. Their passion doesn't include balancing saving the environment with loving the people and seeing that the people in their area have adequate income that their communities have an adequate tax base. So when I get twitchy about purely environmentalist testimony, it's on the basis of we have to love the people and see that the people are cared for with adequate revenue, as well as saving the environment. That's a general statement about how do we do our common ground. So when I listen to your talk about the contract and greatest permanent value, somehow the shift happened that people who had wealth decided they didn't have to care about people who did not have wealth. Too often that is urban, rural. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Appreciate that very much. Anybody else before we let Liz close us all up here? Liz, please bring us. Oh, Mark, did you have a comment?
No.
Liz, bring us home.
Okay. Based on what I've been hearing, I think there may be some value in, Mike, if you would just highlight a couple of pieces from the work that we've done incorporating the FTLAC comment from the last meeting, just so you all can see specifically what he's talking about. These materials were sent out, so I know you've already had a chance to look at them, but sometimes it helps to walk through them. And then Commissioner Thompson, to the question around the surveys and how the people that were surveying, which was just open to the public, it wasn't a selection, how they're seeing the balance. I think we should show you some of the data there that we received as well, because I actually do see a relatively, from Oregonians, a relatively balanced look at managing these forests. So, Mike.
Sure. Before I launch in here, I thought I saw Commissioner Scar's hand go up. Is there something before I do this?
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate that. So my hand went up. I've been listening a lot. I'm a new commissioner. I've only been on board since January. Forestry is not my background. And what I hear in this meeting is the lack of trust. That trust has been broken. We talked about an apple. I think we're talking about an orchard. And I think when we look back, what we see is that through the Linn County lawsuit, we received justification that we've had trees taken out of our orchard. We've had bushels of apples that we did not receive that we should have received. And the trust is broken. And so as I sit here and listen and I think about what we're trying to do, I read the language of these goals and I think they sound great. They sound wonderful. We all want a healthy, thriving forest, and we want salmon and we want invertebrates and we want all of that. But we want to know that it's not at the cost of our bushels of apples. And so as we go through this conversation, I appreciate that we're going to talk about where the FTLAC comments were incorporated. But I think the insight that I would offer is that as we talk about any and all of this, let's talk about greatest permanent value. Let's talk about how this preserves our apples. Let's talk about how you are keeping that at the forefront always, that the breach of trust that occurred, that we've all learned from that, that we've all taken something forward from that, and we are all looking through that lens as we move forward. Because what I hear in the comments in this meeting is that we are fearful that you have not heard our comments, and that this is pushing forward as if the Linn County lawsuit and the justification never occurred. And I hear you saying, Liz, that that's not true, that you are looking at greatest permanent value. I hear you all saying that, you know, this really is about the thriving forest so we can all have our apples. But we don't necessarily believe that, because the trust is broken. And part of the repair of the trust is to continually and consistently put into your language with us that honoring of this is for greatest permanent value. This is putting our interests, those of us with whom you have a contract, at the top of the conversation. So I look forward to the review of how our voice was incorporated into these goals. And I would just encourage forestry, as we have conversations, say it out loud. This is part of the greatest permanent value. This is why we're doing this. We're doing it in support of this. Say it, put it in your words, put it in the public record, put it out there so we hear it and that trust is rebuilt. So that would be my two cents.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thanks, Commissioner Scar.
Thank you. Okay, so I will share this really quickly and show you what we have so far. So the document you all have and kind of how to go through it. I do note here, you know, the annotation. There is one thing in the forest resources listed in the definitions that the plans have to address, which is landscape effect, which is, you know, a fairly broad catch-all. I did not go and try to annotate that. I just made the note that it kind of is part of everything. So some of the, and we are still working on these. What I will say is we are looking to consolidate some of the goals as well based on feedback. As you know, in terms of what's important, and you know, something like pollinators and invertebrates, for example, falls into wildlife. You know, it's part of native wildlife. So whether or not we need to call certain things out or not, still yet to be determined. But anyway, as we go through, what I'd really like to focus on are the timber goals, and what we heard was that we really wanted an emphasis on a couple of different things. So these were split up about Board of Forestry lands and pretty much, you know, paraphrasing of statute and whatnot, and common school forest lands, which is also a paraphrasing of those statutes by which we manage DSL. That was not useful to people, and it was also confusing because some people don't realize that common school forest lands actually says greatest permanent value too, although it is not as defined by, very specifically, not as defined by the greatest permanent value rule for Board of Forestry lands. Anyway, what we did was the suggestion of the emphasis of timber production benefits and highlighting the importance of public services provided by the revenue, so the revenue component of the timber harvest, and this italicized, provide revenue that supports public services in rural communities provided by the state, schools, counties, and special districts. And that is intended to wrap up all shares of revenue and common school forest lands in there as well. You have your county school funds that part of the monies go to, and then of course whatever we do on common school forest lands also some of that money plays into the overall picture as well. So it's intended to capture the overall benefit regardless of the land type that we're speaking to. And then replacing the second goal, again splitting and really focusing on that, providing a sustainable and predictable supply of timber that provides economic opportunity, jobs, and the availability of forest products. And when we get into the special forest products piece, I believe when we look at the overall rule language and we're talking about the availability of forest products and revenue, that is there from special forest products. Obviously, special forest, miscellaneous forest products, however you choose to call them, are a bit of a drop in the bucket compared to timber revenue. But so this really focuses on the timber piece in terms of those products. On forest carbon, we heard you loud and clear on broadening the language to highlight storing carbon in not only on the stump, but also in the harvested wood products. And so we changed that goal to contribute to carbon sequestration and storage, both within state forest lands and in harvested wood products. And those are two things that we feel like as the state forest division, we can control or that we have a great deal of influence over. Obviously growing it on the stump, right? Okay, we grow trees. When we harvest them, we are pretty darn sure that the product that's going to come out of that is going to be a durable harvested wood product that will store some carbon as well. We did stop short of the substitution piece here, not trying to not trying to ignore that, but just in what we do, we can put the product out there and we can try and help that along with the supply, but we, you know, obviously can't tell people how to build. There is probably a larger policy discussion to be had around that, but we're trying to focus in on what we can control within our actual FMP. As we go down here, and I believe we actually get all the way to, just about blew right past it. Another couple of things that we really heard was, you know, making, so our cultural goals, first of all, we are working with the tribes on that in the recognition of the fact that they have ties to those lands since before we manage them. And we are still working on those. But wanting to be sensitive to the fact of the good points you made about recognizing all the communities that have some social fabric that's really tied to the lands. You know, very good points were made about when a mill closes and an economy fundamentally changes in a timber dependent community, it has, you know, definitely a huge ripple effect in the social fabric there. And there's also other communities of place and interest that are historic, that are not tribal. And some of that, and it's related to a number of different economies. So the wording that we have come up with for that added goal is establish strong relationships and mutual trust with all communities of place and communities of interest who have connections with Oregon State Forests. And then the other last one we heard about was actually calling out the specific need for restoration. And so this is one that we are teasing out from the forest health goal overall. And the goal is, we didn't want to make it specific to any particular condition that we deal with today. For instance, you know, obviously Swiss Newcast, and we also have large swaths of alder that do not have productive conifer in them. And for a variety of reasons, we are not on a mission to eliminate alder. I think sometimes that is how people take that, and that is not the case. But we do recognize there are areas that probably need to be brought back into better balance there. And so those are the two big ones that are facing us, especially on the Tillamook State Forest and in Southern Clatsop County as well. But increase forest resilience through restoration by assisting in the recovery of ecosystem function across the landscape in areas that have been degraded or damaged due to biotic or abiotic factors. And so this also speaks, of course, to wildfire and the historic event that we had on the North Cascade District on the St. Anne State Forest in 2020. So those are the ones that we would add. And then there's basically, and by the way, the strategies that would follow out of this would actually reference more specifically Swiss Newcast and so forth. And other than that, there were just the other suggestions from stakeholders and the public that we got feedback that we're still trying to figure out and really want the board's eyes on and how we should, and your eyes on in terms of how we should or shouldn't incorporate them. So anyway, with that, unless somebody wants to see something again, I will just, I'll stop sharing. Oh, actually one thing I do want to share because I am, sorry for all the scrolling. I do like to be optimistic about some things. You know, I think we hear a lot about, we hear from the public, and yeah, okay, a lot of it's urban, give you that, that are opposed to timber harvest, generally speaking. But, you know, I really actually was encouraged by this. The majority of people who chose to respond to this survey, and it's not scientific, right? It's the people who chose to be involved here. But a lot of them that were concerned about drinking water and forest health and everything else also either somewhat or strongly support, you know, this concept. I think that really speaks to the fact that people do see a balance in this, and that it's not all, you know, coming from an anti-timber standpoint. But anyway, I just thought I might point that out. Okay. Are there any questions on?
So, Mike, I don't recall now. Where did these survey results come from?
So when we had our meeting open to the public and stakeholder meetings, and I believe it was the meeting open to the public, we had sent the goals out ahead of time, and we had a straw poll of those in attendance. But then we also put out, and actually this comes from there was a link to a survey that folks could take, and this is where they went to give their more formal input. So this is actually after the meeting. Survey link that was provided to them.
Okay. I just want to refer back to my comments at the very end there, where I say that, you know, while we understand ODF's desire to keep the public informed about its processes and efforts, it is inappropriate for ODF to ask the public to offer goal language in place of that established in law or rule. The same thing goes for priority rankings. I just can't emphasize that enough. While we appreciate that you do want to keep the public informed. They are stakeholders. We are your partners in this. And, somewhere we need to come to some sort of agreement on these goals. And I can see we're still pretty far apart.
And so, you know, I guess I would just say we really are trying to bring people along. So as Liz mentioned, you know, we could put out a fully baked plan in a draft form and then get all the feedback. You know, there's difficulties in doing that as well, in having the public weigh in at that point. For sure. So,
yeah, I appreciate you saying that, and I've written it down. And we try to be very clear that you have a distinct role. The counties have a distinct role with the board in terms of being advisory to the board, which is different than taking public input. We also, it's incumbent upon us to take public input and take that into consideration in our work. So we are in a little bit here between a rock and a hard place, other than in my mind to really to elevate the conversation that you're poised to have with the Board of Forestry is different than the stakeholder input. Looks like Chair Kelly may be ready to weigh in there.
Sure. I was struck, and I know that isn't in any way a scientific survey, but I was struck by those results because I think there's a lot of us who are working really hard and very hopeful that we are at the end of the 40-year timber wars situation, and that we will have a lot more meeting of the minds of different people from different backgrounds. And so I was struck by the result where there was strong support for carbon sequestration in the state forest, and at the same time, very strong support as well for the fact that we would have good solid timber production coming out of those state forests. And that just, it's just nice not to see these people who are obviously just lining up in completely different camps. And so I, for one, see that as a real great positive to see that kind of public input.
Thank you, Chair Kelly. Commissioner Bangs.
Just a couple questions. How many people exactly filled out the survey?
That's in that table as well, Mike. I think it was 52. I don't know if it was the same for all the factors.
I guess, just as a commissioner, I'm running around like my hair is on fire most days and I'm pretty busy. But if we're going to have surveys that ODF is putting out to the public for public input, I sure would like to be able to share that information with my constituency and allow them to, provide some feedback about, what is going to be happening in their backyard. And so I know that you probably sent me an email somewhere in my pile of emails that I have received. But in these meetings, if you're going to have, a link to a survey, I'd sure like to, and maybe you did, and I just was asleep at the wheel. That's fully possible too. I'm just saying that I would really like to be able to get more than 52 people to respond to you, especially considering I know my county would have a lot of a response towards these questions. And so it would be nice. I don't know. Maybe I need a neon sign. That is possible too. Because we go back to that whole volunteer thing. I've got a few irons in the fire right now. So I guess if we're structuring conversations about this around 52 people, I'm disappointed. I would like more.
Okay, and it did vary by question. People were not required to answer every question, but it was like 50 to 54 people. But actually, Jason Cox is on the line here, and I'm sure he knows the distribution. Or I think he knows the distribution.
Yeah, I was actually looking that up. So I will first say, first of all, Chair Yamamoto, commissioners, my name is Jason Cox. I'm a public affairs specialist for the Oregon Department of Forestry. I share the Commissioner Bangs, I think, spoke to they're cutting through the noise of the world and trying to, sort of get these public input processes more out into the world. And I appreciate your suggestions on how we can better bring those to the attention of you as commissioners. I believe we sent the outreach to, I was looking at my emails, approximately, we have a certain email list, the folks that are interested in these topics, about 1,600 people who probably over the years have expressed some interest in these matters. I was looking at the list and a little on the spot, but I was going to make sure that typically we send those to commissioners. But I appreciate the note on how we can better bring those to your attention and make sure that we're engaging your communities. That's one of my goals as a public affairs specialist specific to state forests, is to make sure we're hearing from the communities that are have a lot of stake in how state forests are managed. So really appreciate that suggestion. And that's an effort we're going to continue to build on.
Well, thank you for that. I just, I would imagine that your server is populated with people who have time to be interested in this topic, not by people who don't have time and are working their day jobs and have placed me in the position to try to have that time. So I don't know, neon sign me something. And I know that Commissioner Thompson has a comment, so.
So before we go to Commissioner Thompson, I want to thank Commissioner Bangs and Jason for that comment. But I know Erin Scar was probably, she was trying to hold back a big wide grin when you started talking about misplacing emails and not getting to all of them. Happens to me all the time. It just does. Commissioner Thompson.
Thank you, Chair Yamamoto. So I want to celebrate this goal, establish strong relationships and mutual trust with all communities of place and communities of interest who have connections with the Oregon State Forest. Hot doggies, that is just fabulous. Well done on that one. And let's, for me, that's the number one goal. I think that's what we've all said this morning. We long to do good work together. Commissioner Scar was particularly elegant in that regard, as usual, but and Commissioner Bangs is always there to advocate for that. Commissioner Yamamoto, here you are balancing all this passion with science and law. So well done on that one, too. Here we are, our forestry folk. I mean, you work so hard. You work with such heart, loving the forest and dealing with all of us raspy people. Thank you every day for your patience and good cheer. And now your Board of Forestry chair has had a little flavor of what you have to deal with us. Okay. So going forward, though, you've articulated this goal. I would put that first because for me, that's the foundational piece upon which everything else will rest as we go forward. And thank you for doing it. Well done.
Thank you, Leanne. So we have 3 weeks, roughly 3.5 weeks before the Board of Forestry meets again in early November. Liz and Chair Kelly, you've heard me many times over that, you know, these decisions come fast and furious, and unfortunately without all the input maybe that FTLAC could and should provide. So again, we realize you're on certain schedules, but when we have important issues like this, one of the issues that I continue to talk about is the timing, the amount of time that we really have to weigh in. That's why we have taken a slightly different course this time. We have our own goals in mind as to how this should happen. And I'm not sure that the next 3.5 weeks between now and the next Board of Forestry meeting is enough time to really have the discussions that we need to have. But again, I know that I've been told in the past that we're on a schedule and we need to meet that schedule. One of the biggest issues was the CCCP, where we got the CCCP, the Board of Forestry had a half a day in conversation about the CCCP, and now at the November meeting, they're going to make a decision. Even though it's been told to us that that decision will be just to adopt the CCCP and the details will come later over the next 10, 15, 20 years. So again, that's where a lot of my angst comes from. I just hope everyone understands that.
Yeah, so I'm not, I think there's a request in there perhaps to, I'm not sure if you're suggesting that maybe we should, let me put it this way. The way that this may address what I think you're saying is that we bring the goals as planned to the Board of Forestry in November. You've got your great input. We've attempted to reflect your input that we already received from you into the goals. That's all part of the discussion that the board can hear. We're going to the board fairly frequently next year. I don't see anything that would prevent you as a body from giving additional input, say at the next meeting. I don't have it at the tip of my fingers here, that where we go to the board, where you could add input to the goals conversation along with the material that's being presented at that point, which I think will be strategies, Mike, if I have that right.
Yeah, strategies will be the next step. Sure. So goals in November, We're continuing to work on strategies. Our internal timeline on that, it was a little bit delayed by fire season, but we will be having strategies going to the board in March. And so the rollout for those will actually be in December. We'll be bringing them to you for those comments, and then we'll have plenty of, should have a fair bit of time to work on those in the run up to March.
So that's what I would put forth, David, is that that's how we handle the November meeting, and that you, you know, put a placeholder to wanting to revisit those at the following, at the upcoming board meeting, whichever one that will be. We do have an agenda item in January, if I'm remembering correctly. And so even if it's on, if it's not on the forest management plan goals, you could certainly continue to provide testimony at that point. And we could do everything we can to help you with that.
Again, Liz, you and I have had this conversation in the past where we keep playing defense, even though we provide this testimony to the board. I think we were clear today in our objections to the 20 draft goals. I think we were very clear. And yet what I'm hearing from you at this point is that in November, the board is going to discuss the 20 goals, the 20 draft goals, and make a decision on the 20 draft goals. So I don't know where we go from here. I really don't. And I keep hearing that you guys are glad to have us back at the table. And I will put up a defense there. And this is something that I haven't brought up here before, but when the pandemic hit, it is commissioners nationwide that are the local public health authority. And when this pandemic hit in March of 2020, the commissioners were in a tizzy. We were. And I apologize. We decided that we had other more important things on our plate. And we as a body, FTLAC, were reticent in being a participant to a large extent. As the pandemic continued on, we got better at doing what we do as the local health authority. And so we re-engaged. We've run across the surge in August, September, and I think we handled that pretty well, as best we could. But again, we're just not sure that re-engaging is being beneficial to these conversations. I thought we were pretty clear today, and I don't know. I just don't know where we go from here. I don't.
Yeah, go ahead, Mike. I'm going to let my cat in the door. Excuse me.
So I just, want to make sure that everyone understands, too, that the board is not deciding on goals in November. They are not approving anything. We are not bringing anything for the board to approve until they approve moving forward with the draft plan, which will include all of the plan elements and model the results of modeling to show how the plan is expected to perform, because we want to have the full picture of everything before that happens. We did try in a previous effort bringing things in a stepwise fashion to the board. They did approve guiding principles for the plan, and we are platforming off of those. We've edited them just a little bit, but the substance of them is the same. And that's really guiding principles for how to form up the plan, not necessarily the same as the goals for actual management of resources. But anyway, where that process took us, it was very difficult to get that stepwise adoption of things. And so we are not asking for that in November, and we will not be asking for adoption strategies in March or any of it until we get to the point where there's a draft plan, everybody has a full picture, and then the board you know, will decide on whether or not to move that plan into rulemaking so that we can, you know, get a new FMP. And all along the way, however, the board can provide us with direction on how they would like to see the plan changed, whether it's goals, strategies, or some of the various guidelines in the plan or whatever, or when they look at the outcome saying, we want you to move the needle for this resource one way or the other. So I just want to really reiterate, it's an open discussion and we are receptive to board direction all the way up until and through them saying, go make this a rule.
So Mike, your modeling that you're doing, is this going to include or emphasize economic modeling for the counties and our special districts and the department?
Yes, that's going to be a big part of, I mean, that's always one of the primary outputs. And one of the things that we're working with Mark and Mike on is trying to frame up some different scenarios around what flow of timber over time and spatially might look like to understand the differences of managing or planning at different spatial scales, and also the just the how you want the volume to be meted out over time.
So just so you know, I agree with Commissioner Bangs on this point. I think modeling needs to be done overall using all three issues that we're currently facing, the CCCP, the HCP, along with the update to the forest management plan. And I'm hoping that modeling goes out over 50 years as far as the financial aspects of what's going on. This is something that's going to be extremely important to the trust counties.
Yes, it will include all those factors.
So you're talking combined modeling for all three of the issues that I just mentioned, not individually, correct?
That is correct. So the forest management plan modeling that we will do will have that HCP overlay. And there's not really a climate change and carbon plan overlay that we can model necessarily as a constraint, because there's nothing in there that is presented as a constraint per se. What we will be doing is looking at silviculture, in modeling, you always have to pick and choose. We will be looking at some silvicultural pathways in there for all silvicultural pathways, looking at the carbon both in the trees and then also from any products from any harvest that comes out over the course of the modeling. So you'll be able to see, here's the trade-off, if you will, between an economic versus a carbon objective.
So again, when you do that modeling and we've been very clear, well, in the short time that we've been discussing the CCCP, that the quorum model really does take into effect the replacement issue. And there have been more studies that have just come out. The replacement issue, if you're going to do away with forest products for building and replace it with steel and concrete, which are highly carbon intensive, then the tables just turn. And without adding that into your modeling, I'm not sure we're going to get a clear picture at all.
Well, I think actually, when I look at it, I see that there's a lot in there just from looking at the carbon on the stump and the carbon in the harvested wood products. Just in those volumes alone, it's pretty telling. I understand your point. There's an assumption there on the substitution piece of how much effect that you can have, I suppose, on that. It's a little difficult to actually model that piece.
Commissioner Banks.
As we're delving into the conversation of modeling, are we any closer to modeling of the current HCP? I know in our last conversation, the last model that we had was over a year ago. And I know that we've acknowledged that there have been quite a few changes between a year ago and now. So I'm just curious of when we're going to be able to see that.
So the draft EIS is, best I know, is still slated for sometime in January. And we are, so we have, I know that they have done additional work because they've asked us for additional data, and support for that. So, but I don't know all the particulars of what the EIS team is, of how they're doing that analysis.
Okay, so I might be alone in the room thinking this, but does anybody else feel like that this is a house of cards, that if the modeling for this HCP doesn't come out as projected or as hoped, that our entire house is going to fall down? That's kind of what I'm feeling like. So I don't know if there's anybody else in the room feeling that way, because it's the time gap between modeling periods, and you're basing so much on an HCP that I truthfully, in my layman's opinion and in my, you know, education, feel like your model is not going to be anywhere near what you hope it is going to be. So I just want to lay that out there, that this conversation is uncomfortable, because I do feel like our house is going to fall down.
Yeah, well, maybe I'll speak to that. It has been an immense amount of uncertainty for many years now. So I think that, yeah, I absolutely relate to that. We've been working on revising this force management plan for 10 years. So have definitely been living with that uncertainty, continuing to sustainably manage these forests all throughout that time with what I'd say is a lot to be proud of, with a lot of successes. So, you know, I'll speak for the hardworking people in the State Forest Division that are keeping on going in the midst of all these major policy questions. So with that, here we are on the threshold of, okay, here's a potential solution. We've been here a couple times. We had what was termed then as a land allocation approach. The board was nearing the decision on that. They wanted some more modeling, and then we got the notice of intent for the Linn County litigation, made it very difficult to move forward on that. Then in 2019, we completed an effort on a draft forest management plan. These are both without HCPs, and very difficult to find alignment around that as well. We ended up submitting the final draft just for the record onto the Board of Forestry's in a consent agenda. So that's sitting out there. And now here's our third effort. And here we are right in the middle, right in the beginning, really, with the goals. Everything has to start with goals. So it has been a lot of kind of almost there, almost going to rulemaking. The notion, Commissioner, that when it's all said and done, if we completed these models where we'll have greater certainty in the outcomes, we are yet to figure out what that is. We don't know exactly what that's going to be. That's why we need to model and adjust accordingly. All that information is brought to bear for a big decision by the Board of Forestry. And should they look at all the information in front of them and decide it's not the direction that they want the division to go, we will need to stop, reassess, where do we go from here? So that's that moment of, you're calling it a house of cards, but what I would say is that that's a moment in time where the rubber hits the road and we know really where, what the future's going to look like.
Chair Kelly.
Thank you. I just want to point out, in terms of the house of cards, I do want everybody also to think about that the department has been working really hard to maintain essentially what we've had as a status quo here. And under the threat, we've had this COHO lawsuit that the department and the DOJ has been defending. And if you want to talk about a house of cards, that house of cards potentially leads to a place where a federal judge is managing our state for us. And I think you will all need to be mindful of that. We certainly are. If you think of what's happened in our federal forests, it's a good thing. We've got to work together to make sure that that same thing doesn't happen to us. So there's your real house of cards issue. So just hope that you all recognize that that's a very real possibility. And we will continue to work hard to avoid that, obviously. But we need you to work with us.
And Chair Kelly, just so you know, so that's the reason that Tillamook County intervened along with the department to protect us from that COHO lawsuit. We are still very hopeful that it will move in the right direction. We are. We don't have a lot of money to be putting towards these types of lawsuits, but this is a big one. And we knew that, and that's why we intervened. Commissioner Banks.
And just to reiterate, I don't think any of us in the room are against the premise of an HCP. We're not against it. We're trying to find a balance of survival for our communities. And I mean, I'm not against the premise. I am 100% for, proper management of our forests and considerations for fish and wildlife. So I just want to make sure that that's out there, that as we're having these conversations, I sometimes feel like that gets lost in translation for us, but I don't think any of us are against, habitat. And so as we move forward, we're just trying to eke out some balance. And I think what us as commissioners and Commissioner Yamamoto has alluded to a lot is when we had this discussion for the HCP, and then Commissioner Scar alluded to the loss of trust. And so that's where we're at right now, is these discussions for the HCP didn't happen with us. We weren't in the room, and then more trust was lost. And so we're getting there. I feel like we're getting there, but to give us I hate to just be blunt, but to give us some credit that we're not anti-environment at all in this room. None of us are. We're aware of those lawsuits. They are extremely expensive. Anyhow, I'm not the most eloquent woman in the room, but I hope everybody kind of understands the goal I'm driving at.
Thank you, Commissioner Banks. Okay, what else do we have? I appreciate the conversation. Very robust conversation today. I just hope it gets us somewhere.
Have any other information at this? Obviously, there's not a lot of time left. We were going to update you on timelines and how those interface with the CCCP and the HCP, but those have been, I think, provided to you in the past. So I think we don't really have a lot more to put on the table. In terms of the November meeting, want to just clarify when I said we'll bring these materials to the board in November, what I meant, what I was trying to get across is at this stage, I don't see taking the conversation around goals off of the Board of Forestry agenda item. So that's what I meant. I was not trying to give the message that no matter what you say, we're just going to go forward and without your input. We've shared with you how we want to frame up and represent the input we got from you at the last meeting, and can also share the message that you shared with us on your presentation. In fact, if you will forward that presentation to us, we can certainly include those comments to help amplify your concerns, and then you also obviously would give your own testimony to the board.
Okay, perfect. Anything else? I appreciate everyone being here today. This has been not the easiest conversation. These conversations are never easy. If it were easy, everyone would do it, right? So they're not the easiest conversations, but they're conversations we need to continue to have. So again, I appreciate everyone being here today. Liz, I know we're going to be talking further, hopefully before the Board of Forestry meeting, and we can figure out what we're going to do. We will make sure, and hopefully, and Drenda, you're going to have to help me with this. This afternoon, we are going to have to get out the PowerPoint and the notes that I read off of to all the commissioners and to the department. And if anybody has any questions, you can certainly call me or have any of your commissioners call me if they have any concerns, questions. Anything else for the good of the order at this point?
I also appreciate the robust conversation. I think it is part of building trust. Sometimes we got to kind of tear some things down, the scar tissue, and heal the proper way. So I really want to emphasize that. That's something we're deeply interested in. Rural communities matter to us. Most of our people live in these same communities where you're representing. Certainly appreciate your representation there at the end, Commissioner Bangs. And I would emphasize that as well, is that the commissioners see this holistically and see the benefits and importance of providing for the environmental side of the equation. HCP, and happy to hear you give those comments around an HCP. And recognize that really what I think I'm hearing from you is just wanting it to have the right solution, but that a recognition that HCP is valuable and important. It has been great hearing from all of you today.
So thanks, everyone, especially Chair Kelly. Appreciate you being here. John DiLorenzo, appreciate you being here today. Really do. With that, we will adjourn the meeting until the next fun event.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you so much.